Okay, let's try and find out some answers. Here we go. What are miracles?
Something that requires a divine explanation.
Something that requires a divine explanation.
Something that happens against all odds.
Something happens against all odds, like passing exams.
Yeah.
Something to be marveled at.
Something to be marveled at.
It shouldn't be possible.
It shouldn't be possible.
Same thing.
Ditto.
An example of an event of low probability.
An event of low probability.
Something that defies the law of nature.
At last, someone's given me the wrong answer that I wanted.
Unexplainable.
Inexplicable. Commonly known as unexplainable. Inexplicable. Yeah. Miracles is a concept of the 19th, 20th century. A late 18th, 19th, 20th century. It's not in the Bible. It's the first thing to grasp. That is, when the world came through the Enlightenment as a result of the Reformation into believing the world in its natural state was mechanical, then miracles came into existence as that which defies the mechanical. But the ancient world didn't have such a concept. And so we've got this concept of it's got to be inexplicable, it's got to show divine, whereas the word actually is wonders, marvels. And so things that are astonishing. Well, there's all kinds of things that are astonishing. You know, there's many a mother who thinks their child is astonishing. There's many a mother-in-law who finds their son-in-law extraordinarily astonishing. Where am I up to? I'm here. So why did Jesus work wonders? Well, because he did. There are all kinds of wonders, all kinds of marvelous things, astonishing, astounding things. Why did he do it? Where you go. Okay, let's go quickly on it. Why? We just pick up ideas from the whole group. Yes, why?
To reveal something about his character and nature.
To reveal something about his character and nature. Yep.
To reveal something about the kingdom that was going to come.
To reveal something about the kingdom that was going to come.
So that they may believe.
So that they may believe.
To fulfill Old Testament prophecy.
Oh, rats, that's what we had. Yes, okay. From wrong to completely right, yes?
To show his Lord.
To show?
His Lord.
He is Lord.
To bring about the kingdom.
To bring about the kingdom, yes.
Set up like sermon illustrations.
Set up sermon illustrations for 21st century preachers who don't know what to do. I've been to that group. Yeah, I've got the answers already. Okay, the miracle, the wonders make people astonished and wake up people to ask questions. But John's Gospel, while it talks about works, also talks about signs. So just in general, what is a sign? Not necessarily what are Jesus' signs. What is the very word sign? What is a sign? So as you go on this one, the next question is goes follow it too. Next question just follows from what is the difference between signs and wonders? Keep going. Okay, here's the quiet group over here who's already made all the answers. So what's the difference between signs and wonders? What are signs? What's the difference? You ready? Thank you.
Signs have meaning and purpose.
Signs have meaning and purpose. What do you think a sign is?
Oh, we said signs.
Indicator.
Indicator.
Signs are indicators. Signs are...
They point us towards something.
They inform us about something.
That sign tells us that there's
CO2
in that fire.
Okay, what's the difference between signs and wonders then?
We didn't get
that far.
Signs give direction.
And wonders?
Oh, and wonders can also give direction.
What's the difference between signs and wonders?
Signs don't have to be like impressive, or they can be mediocre.
Signs can be mediocre, unimpressive. You feel more like a sign than a wonder.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. What do you think's the difference between sign and wonder?
Sign like reveals something.
Sign reveals something and wonder?
It's just interesting.
It's just interesting, just wondering, yes?
Who it draws attention to.
Sorry?
It could be about like who it draws attention to. Maybe the one is about the person doing the wonder and the sign can be about someone else.
Ah, the wonder is about the person who does the thing that's wondrous, whereas a sign can be pointing to somebody else. Yeah? Any other differences you want to come with? Yes?
Oh.
They're all pointing at you, so it must have something to say.
We were saying maybe sign wonders you can be a bit more apathetic towards, with signs are maybe more clearly pointing you or leading you to something.
Yes, wonders you can be a little apathetic towards. Although if they're really wonders, they're astonishing. But signs you can't afford to miss because they're important to follow or to indicate something for you. Okay, let's move to John's Gospel again. Percy? Yeah, people like to say there are 7 I am sayings and 7 signs, but the scripture doesn't say it, although the first two in Cana of Galilee are both counted. The end of middle of chapter 2 and the end of chapter 4. They say this is the first he did in Cana of Galilee, the second he did in Cana of Galilee. But they may not be the first and second he did, just maybe the first and second he did in Cana as opposed to elsewhere. So I'm going to ask Rosie to help me this time. There is this great passage, and Rosie is working very hard at understanding the logic of sentences. Is that right?
Yes.
So, it says there are these signs that are not written in this book, but are there other signs that are written in the book?
Yeah, I think so. We see in John chapter 2, actually, in verse 23, that the people saw the signs that he was doing. So signs beyond that one sign at water into wine. So he's doing lots of signs around. And even in the other Gospels, we can see that there are signs which we haven't listed in the 7 just there. So there are other things that he is doing beyond these ones.
But John has others, like in John, what did you say, John 2?
John 2, 23, it talks about the other sign, what it says, saw the signs.
Were they in Cana of Galilee?
These are at Jerusalem.
Okay, so there are other signs.
Yes.
All right, well now, why are these particular signs that are written in John, because those ones are mentioned, but they're not actually spelt out. Yeah. Why are these particular ones mentioned in John?
Yeah, so I think what you were saying about the linking of the sentence, the words in this sentence are really key. So that in these verses helps us understand that there is a purpose to the signs.
So that sounds like a result. Why is it purpose? How do you know it's purpose?
The Greek, which tells us that it's sort of in order that is a better sort of translation for what it could be.
You mean there's been an advantage coming to Moore College?
Maybe, yeah.
I'll try that again. You mean there's an advantage in coming to Moore College?
Yes.
Wickedness. Okay. But what is the purpose?
Well, I think there's an immediate and a future purpose to these signs.
Well, what's the immediate?
So that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. That is the immediate.
And what's the what did you say the other one was?
The future.
Future, the long term. What's that?
That by believing in him, you may have life in his name. The life.
Okay, so both of them are talking about believing. One's talking about believing that, the other's believing just in general. What's believing about?
Yeah, so I think as we say throughout John, there's a lot of talk about belief. The way that it's talked about is often in believing in or believing that or just believing. And generally when we see the believing that language, it's talking about believing in the claims that Jesus is making, that he's the Son of God, that he's been sent from God. So they are statements, so fact-based belief, whereas the believing in phrase is often to do with believing in Jesus.
So why should I believe you?
Well, because I'm speaking about God's word.
Am I believing that or believing in when I believe you?
Believing that.
Believing that you're speaking?
Yes. Believing what I'm saying.
Believing what you're saying or yeah. Believing you?
Believing me, yeah. But not believing in. Believing in is distinct again.
Well, what's believing in?
Believing in is more of a personal or relational way of talking about belief, in that you are depending, you are entrusting yourself, and in the Bible we see it's in Jesus, in a way that is different from just the fact-based, believing that this is true.
So you can believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, but still not believe.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of people believing throughout John's Gospel who Jesus actually doesn't entrust himself to, which is within that same section of chapter 2.
Read it for us. What is it?
So chapter 2, verse 23. Where we were seeing the other signs. So, now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs that he was doing. But Jesus, on his part, did not entrust himself to them, because he knew all people and needed no one to bear witness about man, for he himself knew what was in man.
So they believed in his name, but they weren't believers.
No.
That's complicated.
They are a class of believers, I suppose, but yeah.
That's complicated.
The nature of belief seems very complex in John.
Is there any other word we can have that can connect us then to believing that would make better sense for us?
Yeah, so back in chapter 1, we see in the prologue, which helps us understand the book of John, in maybe I'll read from verse 9 of chapter 1.
Mm-hmm.
The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. So I think there's a helpful word in there which he sort of parallels, which is receive. So in verse 12, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. So true believers are those who receive Jesus, and they are given that right to become children of God. So we're looking for those believers.
But it's going to be complicated when we use believing.
Maybe.
Okay, well, Tony might rescue us, do you think?
Please do.
Please do. In Aramaic, called Bethesda, which had five roofed colonnades, in which lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been there a long time, he said to him, "Do you want to be healed?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I'm going, another steps down before me." Jesus said to him, "Get up, take your bed, and walk." And once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. Now, what is it signifying? Well, it's signifying the power of Jesus. His word is better than the magical potions of the pool. He can do something with a word that this poor man hasn't been able to do for 38 years, etc. But no, the reason goes further. Verse 5. Is it 5? No, it's the second half of verse 9. Now, that day was the Sabbath. There's the thing. So the Jews said to the man who had been healed, "It's the Sabbath. It's not lawful for you to take up your bed." But he answered them, "The man who healed me, that man said to me, 'Take up your bed and walk.'" They asked him, "Who is the man who said to you, 'Take up your bed and walk?'" Now the man who had been healed did not know who it was, for Jesus had withdrawn as there was a crowd in the place. Afterwards Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you are well. Sin no more. Have nothing worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had healed him. This is why the Jews were persecuting Jesus, because he was doing these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, "My Father is working until now, and I am working." This was why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. So, what is this sign signifying? Well, it has to do with what the Sabbath is and God's work. Remember, God created the world in 6 days, rested the seventh day. There is no eighth day in the Bible, it's only the seventh day. But in the seventh day, when God is not working, he's not working at creating anything new. But he is working at sustaining everything that's there. He is working at healing. He is working in judging the world. It's not that God is asleep on the seventh day, but the works that Jesus is doing are actually the works of the Father. And so his special works, his signs, indicate the Father is working through him, because he's doing the kinds of things the Father does on the Sabbath. The Sabbath is the day of salvation. In Exodus chapter 20, you have the Ten Commandments. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, you have the Ten Commandments. They differ from each other. The commandment in Exodus on the Sabbath says the reason for keeping the Sabbath is the creation. The commandment in Deuteronomy, the reason for keeping the Sabbath is the promised land. Funny difference, isn't it? Well, it's not different, because the Sabbath is the promised land. It's the land of rest. It's the land of peace. It's heaven. It's the image of eternity. It's the age to come. And so Jesus is doing the Sabbath work, God's Sabbath work, on the Sabbath. But in so saying it like that, he's calling himself God. Well, at least the Jews understood he was. That's why they hated him. Verse 18 is one of the more important little verses in John's Gospel. When you're wanting to do your analysis of John's Gospel, can I encourage you to pay attention to 5:18? It's a slightly more significant verse than you may expect. Come across to chapter 6. He feeds the 5,000. After he's fed the 5,000, we won't read the account. I think you'll know that one fairly well. Verse 14, when the people saw the sign he had done, they said, "This indeed is the prophet who is coming into the world." As Deuteronomy promised, a prophet like Moses who would come into the world. So here it is. But they didn't understand it, perceiving that they were about to come and take him by force and make him king. Jesus withdrew to the mountain by himself. So they saw what it was supposed to point to, the new Moses, but they interpreted that as making him king. And he wasn't going to become king by popular support, he was going to become king by execution on the cross. So he withdrew. He then walks on the water, and there's no explanation of that. But later, as you look here and say, pick it up, verse 25, when they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, "Rabbi, when did you come here?" And Jesus answered, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you're seeking me not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill in the loaves." I mean, they did see the sign. It's not just visually seek, but they didn't perceive the sign. They didn't understand the sign. They just had a good feed. "Do not labor for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you. For on him God the Father has set his seal." Then they said to him, "What must we do to be doing the works of God?" Jesus answered them, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent." So they said, "Well, then what sign do you do so that we may see and believe you? What work do you do, perform?" See how works and signs go together? "Our fathers ate manna in the wilderness, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat." Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, it wasn't Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And they said to him, Sir, give us this bread always. And Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. Moses was the great one. There was going to be a prophet like Moses. But this prophet like Moses turned out to be more than anything Moses ever did. Moses didn't do it, and God gave the bread. But the bread that God gave actually is Jesus. You might remember back in Deuteronomy, we're told that Moses said, God gave you hunger and gave you bread to teach you that man will not live by bread, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. You eat the bread, tomorrow you'll be hungry. You eat of Jesus, you will never be hungry or thirsty, as the case goes on. Go down to chapter 9. Jesus heals the man who's born blind. Remember that one? Right at the end of it, Jesus is challenged. The end of chapter 9, again, it's an event that I think you will remember, so I'm not reading it for you, but pick down verse 39. Jesus said, For judgment I came into the world, for those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to him, Are we also blind? Jesus said to them, If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, We see, your guilt remains. See, throughout the event, this man who's born blind, Jesus gives sight. And the Pharisees, who have sight, are blind to what Jesus has done. And so the sign and the symbolism is a sign and symbolism of people's spiritual sight, people's ability to see what the truth is right in front of them. It's one of those signs. And of course, the raising of Lazarus occurs in chapter 11, which points to Jesus' own resurrection in due time, where it's pointing out that, well, pick it up in Martha's statement down verse 21. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you. Jesus said to her, Your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection of the last day. I mean, to say to a Jew you're going to rise again is to say you're going to go to heaven. But she said, Well, I know that. That's obvious. And then Jesus said, I am the resurrection. Right? The last day has arrived. It's standing right in front of you. This is the judgment of the world. I am it. Believe in me and you'll never die. He who dies will live again. So here's just some of the signs. And you see, they symbolize something, but it's not altogether clear and easy to see what they signify. You see, I think the signs divide as the parables do in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Why did Jesus speak in parables? So as to divide the audience. Why does Jesus do signs? So as to divide the audience. Those who see will see more, and those who can't see, even what they can see, is taken away from them. Now, how do you see that? Well, go across to chapter 12. And chapter 12 is an important structural part of the gospel. That is, from chapters 1:19 through to chapter 12, Jesus is in public ministry. From chapter 13 to chapter 18, Jesus is in the upper room or on the Mount of Olives talking just to his disciples. 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 is one long conversation just to the disciples. You got all those chapters just in one conversation, whereas you had 3 years in chapters 1 to 12. The turning point happens at chapter 12. More of that in coming weeks. But look at the summary of what's happened at the end of chapter 12, or towards the end of chapter 12, verse 36b. When Jesus had said these things, he departed and hid himself from them. Though he had done so many signs before them, they still didn't believe in him. so that the words spoken by the prophet Isaiah might be fulfilled. Lord, who's believed what he heard from us, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Which is Isaiah 53. Therefore they couldn't believe, for again Isaiah said, he has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, lest they see with their eyes and understand with their hearts and turn, and I would heal them. That's exactly the same part of Isaiah chapter 6 that is used to explain why people do not understand the parables. So where Matthew, Mark and Luke use Isaiah 6 to show how parables blind people from seeing the truth, John uses the same passage to show why people see the signs and are blinded to what the truth is, because it wasn't the intention of God to show himself in the signs anymore. It was the intention of God to explain himself in the parables. When you see these signs, you're supposed to say, well, what's going on? What's happening? And some people, in asking that question, will come to the truth and see Jesus for who he is. But most people will say, I don't know, but it was good bread. What if we get it again tomorrow? Maybe if we make him king, we'll get it every week. You see, they miss the point completely. And so it's the purpose of God to divide. Well, now come back and let's look at a few of those. John chapter 2. Go back to that passage that Rosie was reading for us. John 2, verses 23, but we'll go a little longer. Now when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs that he was doing. But Jesus, on his part, didn't entrust himself to them, because he knew all people and needed no one to bear witness about man, for he himself knew what was in man. Now there was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. This man came to Jesus by night and said to him, Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher come from God, for no one can do these signs that you do unless God is with him. Jesus answered him, truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. I always think verse 3 sounds a kind of rude rebuff to Nicodemus. Nicodemus comes, he's a rabbi, he's a leader, he's an important man. He comes to Jesus and seems to be humble in saying, Rabbi, we know the teacher come, you're the teacher come from God, because look at the wonderful signs. But he's just been told Jesus doesn't trust people who believe because of signs. And because the sign of Jesus is not that he's a teacher. The sign of Jesus is that he's the Messiah, that he's the Son of God, that God is at work in him. Nicodemus hasn't understood the sign at all. He's just been impressed by someone who can do signs. And so Jesus' response to a man who's just impressed that he can do signs is to say, you, and the word you is in the singular here, it's not just general, it's you personally, you need to be born again. You haven't understood. As the conversation goes on with Nicodemus, it's quite clear he hasn't understood. He hasn't got the faintest clue what it's about. He's just impressed by the signs. Signs are impressive. You get someone doing signs, you'll turn up to hear and see more of them. This is really impressive. But impressive is not what it's about. Understanding is what it's about. Well, how do you come to understand? Come across to chapter 4. Very funny little phrase here in chapter 4. Jesus has just spoken to the Samaritans. Now remember, the Samaritans were the half-caste, leftover, northern Israelite Jews. They weren't Jews, they were anti-Jews, the northern Israelites. The Samaritans hated the Jews, and the Jews hated the Samaritans. The Jews went up to the Samaritans' temple in Gerizim and pulled it down. The Samaritans went down to Jerusalem and offered up a pig in the temple in Jerusalem. You know, they really hated each other with a deep, deep hatred. Jesus goes and speaks to the Samaritans, and they come to believe in this Jew. That is an extraordinary thing. He came again then, verse 46. Sorry, I'm still struggling with my eyes here. And the little numbers are killers. So if I give the wrong verse number, tell me, call out. Verse 46. So he came again to Cana in Galilee, where he'd made the water and wine. And at Capernaum, there was an official whose son was ill. When this man heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went to him and asked him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. Now, is Jesus going to go and heal the man's son? Is Jesus going to reject the man's? What does Jesus say? Jesus said to him, unless you see signs and wonders, you'll not believe. And the official said, come down before my child dies. Jesus gives the word and the man's son's healed. But you must likely have missed the point. Look back to 43. After 2 days, Jesus departed from Samaria to Galilee. For Jesus himself had testified that a prophet has no honour in his own hometown. So when he came to Galilee, what would you expect? You'd expect the Galileans rejected him. But look what it says. The Galileans welcomed him. Hang on. When you go to your home country, hometown, you'll be rejected. Jesus goes to his hometown and is accepted. Why? Well, you're told why. Having seen all that he'd done in Jerusalem at the feast, they'd too gone to the feast. The feast is back in chapter 2. What happens in chapter 2? Jesus does miracles. People believe in Jesus. But the belief in Jesus in chapter 2 is miracle belief, and that's phony belief. These are phony believers. These are the people that Jesus doesn't trust. That's why they welcomed him. If Jesus does miracles, people will welcome him for the miracles, not for their signification. Tonight, 5 to 9, I will wave my hand over you, and all of you who have defective eyesight will be fixed immediately. You'll never need glasses again, just by the wave of my hand. How many people are going to come to Forum next week? And how many of them will be wearing glasses, do you think? Huh? I mean, they want this, won't they? But what would it mean for me to do that? What would be the point? What would be the significance? What would be the intention that lays behind it? So Jesus is there and he can feed 5,000 people with food. Just a couple of loaves and fish. Well, of course people want it next week, don't they? Just like the bespectacled people who are going to turn up next week. Except I'm not going to wave my hand because I don't want you fixed. No, that's not the reason. Because I can't do it. Well, I can wave my hand, but I can't fix you. But you see, that's what people just want to see, the miracle. They want to see the wonder. They want to experience the wonder that it might be. But they don't see what it is signifying. And so, that's why Jesus has this sudden rebuff there in verse 44. Unless you see signs and wonders, you're not going to believe. It's a way of saying, I don't trust you. Again. And then he sends a word off, and the boy is cured at the time at which he said, your son will live. And so the man believed. He's still left a little confused as to what. Look across at John 6:35. John 6, where I stopped for reading. Jesus said to them, I am the bread. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall never thirst. But I said to you that you have seen me and yet you do not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never cast out. For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I should lose nothing at all of all that he has given me and raise it up at the last day. For this is the will of my Father, that everyone who looks on the Son and believes in him should have eternal life. And I'll raise him up on the last day. Well, the Jews grumbled about this, saying, I'm the bread that came down from heaven. We know him, he's Joseph's son, etc. Jesus answered, 43, do not grumble among yourselves. No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him. And I will raise him up on the last day. Hang on. Sounds a little predestinarian, doesn't it? See, Jesus is going around the countryside, doing the miracles, doing the teaching. And people are believing but not really believing. In a moment I'll show you some of them not even believing. But there are some who are believing and accepting. And who are the ones who are believing and accepting? They're the ones that God the Father is working in. That God the Father is drawing. See, Isaiah 6, the miracles, the signs, and the parables are spoken in order that people will not believe. But in amongst the people who will not believe, there are some that the Father is drawing to the Son in order to believe. That is, what is happening in the ministry of Jesus is the supernatural exercise of God the Father. It is more to this than just human explanations that Jesus is saying. Look at the human explanation over the next page, John 7. Go over to John 7. After this, Jesus went in Galilee. He wouldn't go up to Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Now the Jews' feast of booths was at hand. So his brothers said to him, leave here and go to Judea, that your disciples may also see the works you are doing. For no one works in secret if he seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourselves to the world. Now why do they say that? Verse 5. For not even his brothers believed in him. Did they believe he could do miracles and signs and wonders? Yes. That's where they're saying, go and do them. Show them. Do them publicly. Let people see it. But you see, they didn't actually understand why he was doing what he was doing. It was not to draw crowds. It was not to make a name for himself. It was to... That's not the purpose. And so he says, Jesus said to them, my time's not yet come. Your time's always here. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify about it, that its works are evil. You go up to the feast. I'm not going yet. And then he goes again later, secretly. But he doesn't go to show himself. They are classic 21st century public relations experts. This is the moment to make a big splash. He's saying, no, this is not the moment to make a big splash. And anyway, I'm not doing these works in order to make a big splash. That's not what it's about. And so you see how the parables in Matthew, Mark, Luke are functioning like the signs are in John. There's no parables in John, but they're signs. Come down later in chapter 7, verse 30. Two or three more texts, then I'll answer the questions and we'll have supper. John 7, 30. What have I got here? I've got this is wrong somehow. So they were seeking to arrest him, but no one laid a hand on him because his hour had not yet come. Yet many people believed in him and they said, when the Christ appears, will he do more signs than this man has done? So they see the signs are everywhere and the signs are pointing to what he is, the Christ, but yet I think it's... Is it 9:30 that I'm on in? There is a verse which says... Where is the verse which says, do not judge by appearances? 7 what? Ah, thank you. Yes, thank you. Pick it back up down verse 20. Yeah, I've written 34, it should be 20. Thank you. Pick it up down to 20. The crowd answered, "You have a demon. Who's seeking to kill you?" Because he's saying they're seeking to kill me. Jesus answered them, "I did one work and you all marvel at it. And Moses gave you circumcision." Not it's from Moses, it was from the fathers. "And you circumcise a man even on the Sabbath. If on the Sabbath a man receives circumcision, so that the law of Moses may not be broken, are you angry with me because on the Sabbath I made a man's whole body well? Do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment." You see, you've got to have right judgment. And you will misunderstand if you don't think clearly about the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not the day in which you mustn't do good. The Sabbath is the day in which you must do good. Not just do good, you must do God's good. Healing a whole man is God's good. And so that's what you should be doing. Circumcision is not the same. And yet you'll do that. And so then it goes across to John 10:37. "If I'm not doing the works of my Father, then don't believe me. But if I do them, even though you don't believe me, believe the works, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I am in the Father." Well, again, they sought to arrest him. See, what was Jesus doing? Well, he was doing God's work, because God was working through Jesus. He was doing what God sent him to do. They're the works that he does. They're his signs. If you don't know God, you won't recognize God's... See, we beheld his glory. What was his glory? John 1:14. Who can recite that verse for me, please? John 1:14. Come. Need your Bible verses. John 1:14. "The Word became flesh." Press on. What's the next bit? Sorry? "And he dwelt among us.
We have seen his glory."
And we've seen his glory.
Glory as a...
The glory of?
Son from the Father.
The one and only Son of the Father.
Full and grace and truth.
Right? Let's all try it again together, shall we? Right? "The Word became flesh and we... The glory of full of..." Well, that's a struggle here, folks, isn't it? It's a struggle. But you see, the glory that he's showing, that he can't help but show because it's true, is he's just like his Father. That's the glory. He looks just like, he acts just like, he is like his Father. And what is his Father? Full of grace and truth. So when you see his works, you see the Father's works, because actually the Father is working through him. And so if you don't believe him, well, just look at his works. At least believe in his works, because if you believe in his works, you'll believe in the Father. But of course, you've got to understand what the works mean. And that's what the Jews didn't do. However, after his resurrection, now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you may believe that. What? See, the "that" is an important word at this point. It's what you are to believe. You are to believe that Jesus is the Messiah. That you are to believe that Jesus is the Son of God. Because by believing that, you may have life in his name. So it's Jesus is demonstrating that he is God's Son. And as God's Son, he is demonstrating that he is the Messiah. But that's what the people couldn't see, because they didn't know God. But anybody that the Father was drawing to himself would recognize him in the miracles he did and understand him in the parables he taught. Remember, Jesus didn't come into the world with a long-term superannuation plan. He didn't actually aim to have a nice riverside front cottage down on the Jordan, right? Or a hill resort somewhere in, right? He came into the world to save sinners by dying on the cross. And in order to die on the cross, he in a sense had to alienate the people of God. He had to alienate Israel. Mind you, it wasn't hard to alienate Israel because they were alienated from God by their sinfulness. All he had to be was like God, and they would hate him enough to kill him. So that's what he was doing. Most of people who don't read their Bibles, especially those who don't read their Bibles carefully, think that Jesus came into Israel to win the people over, right? And then he'd be able to set up the kingdom on this earth. And so he was doing miracles to make himself popular, and he was teaching wonderful little stories that would make him popular even amongst children. And so he'd embrace everybody as the ultimate Mr. Inclusiveness, and then he would never have been crucified. And if that was the case, he never would have paid for the sins of the world. It's the wrong storyline that most people outside of genuine Bible believers have got. And they keep reading the episodes but miss the point. Well, that's all right. That's exactly what happened in Jesus' day, isn't it? People saw him. Huge crowds went out to see him. They followed him. They brought their sick to him. They enjoyed his teaching. And then they called out, "Crucify, crucify," because they hated him. That's what sinners will always do. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Okay.